Welcome to episode 431 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show where we talk about Microsoft entertainment technology, including audio, video, gaming, and more across all Windows platforms. Josh, I ate a lot of turkey last week. How about you?
I ate a lot of everything last week, I think.
I think that's what we're supposed to do, though, right?
Yeah. Every other Thanksgiving is my favorite Thanksgiving, and that's because I go to visit family who lives really near you, which means I get to have dinner with you on those weeks, and this year was no different. You and I got to get together for dinner with our loved ones. It was awesome, and the reason I bring that up is not just because it's awesome to see you occasionally, but while we were having dinner, you told me that you heard the average American on Thanksgiving consumes 6,500 calories. And that has stuck with me ever since you said that. And it's frightening. I wish you would have told me that before Thursday.
So how many calories do you think you took in on Thursday?
I'm not sure. I really doubt it was 6,500. I didn't go bonkers. And even if I did consume more than you, I ran a 5K in the morning. Did you?
Yeah. So on the day after Thanksgiving, I was watching everybody post their guilt stats from their workouts on Friday. And I call them guilt stats because I think partly you do it because you feel like you're making up for all the eating that you did on Thursday. And then I also feel like you do it to make everybody else feel bad. I refuse to do either because I didn't work out and I wasn't going to feel bad about it. But, you know.
Right. You shouldn't. Okay, so let's maybe get into the actual podcast here. So I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Let's move on because we have two wonderful messages from one person. They came from Henry, and he sent them into our email inbox at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com.
Indeed. Why don't I start us off with the first one, which is shorter. He says, thank you for always answering my questions, but I'm trying to figure out what is the best solution to back up all of my movies to a hard drive since I'm becoming more of a minimalist. Man, I totally hear you. And the 4K thing, that is breaking it for me. I actually created a separate section in my drawer where I store, my bookcase where I store all the discs so that I can get easy access to the 4K discs now. They're out of alphabetical order, Josh. My 4K discs are out of alphabetic order with the rest of the movies. That bugs me to no end. Anyway, we're not answering Henry's question. And, I think you mentioned to him when you got back to him by email directly that, of course, our favorite solution for this software-wise is Make MKV, and we both use that. We've had a lot of success with that. It is a product that, after a trial period, you need to purchase if you want to use it to back up copies of discs that you own on Blu-ray, but it can back up anything on DVD without having to actually purchase a license for it. I do want to mention, so that we're being responsible, that technically it's unclear if this is legal in some jurisdictions.
Yep. That is worth mentioning, I suppose. Make MKV has really become the industry standard for ripping Blu-rays and DVDs. I honestly don't know if it works for 4K UHD Blu-rays yet.
It does not.
Okay. So I imagine it'll happen, but there just aren't many 4K UHD Blu-ray drives for PCs yet, and they probably have a different protection scheme and all that stuff. So until all of that stuff gets figured out, this is pretty much just for your Blu-rays and your DVDs, but it works out really, really well. There's a million articles out there on the internet, including on the Digital Media Zone, on how to use it. check it out. It's worth spending a little bit of time learning how to use it and how you want to back up your movies. I think the easiest route, especially when using MakeMKV, is just go in there, select the biggest file. That's the actual movie and nothing else, because I don't care about trailers and I don't care about all the extra features. I just want to watch movies, and it'll give you one MKV file and then stick that in a folder for Plex. Because once you have it on a hard drive, then what? You have to consume it somehow, and you don't just want to be browsing Windows Explorer to get at your movies. You're going to want to look at something like Plex, which is free, or MBE or Kodi. I mean, all of these options are out there. They're all free. At least most of them are free. Like, the only one that really comes to mind that isn't free is J River Media Center, which is by far the most powerful, I would say. It definitely the most tweaker, like so many different options. But I'm not a big fan of the user interface. I know Richard isn't either.
Yep.
I think Plex nails it in all of the important areas. The interface is great. It's super easy to set up. It's super easy to use, but it maybe isn't as customizable as some of the other things like Kodi, like MB. But I think that's okay, because it's just easier and has so many features. Yep. So that's what I would check out. And Plex, and well, really all of those things will basically run on anything. If you want to get started just running it on your computer, it does that. If you've got a NAS that's powerful enough, you can probably run Plex right on your NAS. I do it off of an NVIDIA Shield TV. There's a million different things. It runs on Mac. It runs on, I think it even runs on Linux, but who does that? So you've got a million different options there. But I would start with MakeMKV for actually doing the ripping, and then Plex to start off with in terms of a media server, a media library server.
Agreed. Henry, I want to add, we have a listener, Alan, in the chat, who's reminding us that any DVD is another solution for this. And I used to use this product. I don't remember if you did, Josh, but I stopped using it when they basically shut down and then reopened under another name, requiring you to essentially repurchase the software, which I was not going to do.
Right. Yeah, I had almost forgotten about that too. And I know that some people use Handbrake, but I think that doesn't work, or it doesn't do doesn't deal with the copy protection stuff. So you would need something else to deal with the copy protection aspect of it too.
Yep.
All right. So we've got another message here from Henry. He says, I have a computer room and I have an old Creative Inspire 7.1. The model number is P7800 computer speaker system, currently in there with four speaker stands. It's time to upgrade my sound system, and I was curious about your opinion. The room is about 13 feet by 10 feet, and there is a queen size bed in there. He lays out three options. The first one is, should he get one of the newest Logitech options, and that's the Z906. It is a 5.1 setup with a Bluetooth adapter. Apparently, they just drastically lowered the price by about $200, which makes him wonder, should he get it because it's cheap, or should he hold off because maybe there's a new thing coming out? That option is around $300 from Amazon. He also tossed out another option. Klipsch has powered PC monitor, like PC speakers. It's the Klipsch R-15PM, and these are self-powered, so you don't need an amp or a receiver or something like that. They can also be connected to your computer through USB, which is kind of different for, you know, a speaker company like Klipsch. And then also pairing that up with a Klipsch R8SW, which is an 8-inch subwoofer. The speakers themselves are about $300-ish on Amazon, depending on the finish that you get. The subwoofer is around $200 on Amazon. So for $500, he would have a 2.1 setup that's probably going to sound amazing. It's going to sound like Klipsch. I mean, Klipsch has a very particular sound that a lot of people like. Some people don't. If you do, cool. That's almost without a doubt going to sound a lot better than the Logitech option that he picked, but it's only 2.1. It's not 5.1. I don't know how much that matters. His third option is, he says, do you think computer speakers are coming that incorporate Dolby Atmos? And if so, should I wait? And he's specifically talking like a 5.1.2 setup where he's got, you know, the front three, a couple of surrounds, and then the subwoofer and two overhead speakers. That would be amazing. But I did some looking. It still doesn't look like, in terms of hardware, there's an easy option for doing that. Yeah. I can't find any way of doing this without a receiver. And that just drastically increases the cost of all of this.
Right. I would agree. And I think, honestly, if we do see products that can do Atmos for a computer, it's going to be along the lines of a projection system, right? It would be something that actually projects that upper channel up from your desk to the ceiling and then back down at you.
Well, that could be. But I think the difficult part here isn't the speakers, right? I mean, we have speakers that'll do this. Speakers like you're talking about that'll reflect the sound off the ceiling, or speakers that you just mount up higher, like what you recently did.
Yeah, but not for a computer, not that are self-powered like this. That's the big problem, right? So I think in this case, honestly, let me answer the last one first, because I think the last one, we're far from it. I think we're far from the right hardware for that, for Atmos off the desktop. And I also think that we are likely to see it very, very possibly from Microsoft first through headphones before we see it from speakers.
Yeah, I mean, you can already do Dolby Atmos on a PC. There's the Dolby Atmos for headphone profile, like you said. You just go to the Windows Store, buy the Dolby, I think it's called Dolby Access app, and your computer will absolutely support outputting Dolby Atmos sound, whether that's the headphones profile or real traditional Atmos. But for that real traditional Atmos, that just means sending it out through the HDMI port of your computer. And then what? And then your only option is a receiver. So there isn't a great option for this, but I know that that's actually what Henry wants. Henry has written to us before talking about wanting Atmos on his computer, in his computer office. My thought is, he says that it's time to upgrade his computer speakers. Why? If they still sound fine, and what you really want is Atmos, just hold on to them, dude. Like, don't spend the money right now. Wait until there's a better Atmos setup. Like, if you just want absolutely better sound quality, then go that Klipsch route. I think you're going to love that. That's probably going to sound really phenomenal. It kind of made me jealous when you pointed these speakers out to me. But I don't. If what you've got in there still sounds good to you, it's still getting the job done, and what you really want is Atmos, then I would just say to hold on to what you've got and wait until there's a reasonable Atmos option.
Which I think is a long time out, actually. I would agree with you. I think the Klipsch option is really nice. I would go with that over Logitech because, well, let's see, what does Logitech do? They create whole bunch of different accessories for computers and entertainment systems. And what does Klipsch do? All right, they make speakers.
Right. Yes. They're also an American company, which is cool. I mean, that's always nice to see.
That is cool. I don't know why I would not have guessed that for whatever reason, from their name alone, probably. I might have guessed they were German.
No, they're based in Indianapolis, actually.
Cool.
Yeah. All right, well, that does it for our listener feedback this week. Again, you can shoot us an email, entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, or a bunch of different ways you can get a hold of us, which we'll run through at the very end of the show. So let's get into our big video news of the week. And surprise, surprise, it's Plex news.
No.
I know, it's shocking. We barely talk about Plex on the show. But when big announcements, actually, that's not true. This wasn't a big announcement. this was actually kind of hard to find.
Yeah, this
because
is
it was
crazy.
Just buried in the in the release notes.
Right, right. They didn't even put anything out about this. They didn't send anything out to their beta users. There's an update to the beta channel, people who are getting beta updates. And I went and loaded it because, you know, it said, hey, there's an update. Okay, I'll do that. And every once in a while, not always, every once in a while, I actually look at what's in this release. Guess what's in this release? Commercial skipping.
Yeah. So real quick, before we get into how this all works and how it's worked for us, do you think they didn't make a big deal out of it because it's kind of a dicey thing that is really caught the ire of many media companies? That, you know, like when Dish did this with the Hopper, the TV networks went crazy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. Somehow PlayOn made a big deal out of it and still nobody noticed. I honestly don't know. I don't know what their real intent was here. My guess is that they didn't make a big deal out of it because, as you and I are both going to discuss, it's not fully baked yet.
Nope. Okay, so let's talk about how this works. It's really easy. First, you got to be in the beta channel, do the update to the latest version, and it's basically enabled. It's kind of weird because by default in the regular DVR options and settings for me, it was not checked. But if you go into any of your TV series recordings, it is enabled. So yeah, that's maybe just another bug that they've got to work on.
I hope that's a bug because that's a really bad implementation decision, if not.
Right. And the reason it's a bad implementation decision is this is destructive commercial skipping. The way that this works is once your television show is finished recording, it automatically starts analyzing the video file, looking for those commercials. And then when it finds a commercial, it cuts it out of the video file entirely.
Right.
So this takes a little bit longer because it's got to remux the whole file when it's done. But it
nicely
means that,
said.
But the big benefit of that is it just works with everything because they only need to update the server for that to work. Because once the file is put back together, then the commercial skipping happens regardless of what your Plex client is. You know, if you're watching on your phone, you don't need an update to the phone app or on your Xbox or anything like that, because it's just another video file that happens to have been chopped to pieces and smashed back together again. So yep. I think that might be one of the reasons they did it that way.
Yep.
But, and all of that is great if it works all the time.
Now, right? Now let's ask our listening audience, how many of you have used commercial skipping technology that worked right all the time? I'm guessing, yeah. I'm not seeing any hands right now.
Yeah. Alan in the chat says never. I've used ComSkip. I used Show Analyzer. You know, there are some options out there. They were good. They were really good. But even when I was doing this back in the Windows Media Center days, this is not how I did it. Partly, for two reasons. One reason is it takes longer because it's got to do all of that messing with the files. B, I don't want to mess in with the files because I want everything in the highest quality possible. And C, it's risky. The way that I had this set up with Windows Media Center, and people could still do this today with ComSkip and stuff.
Yep.
I had it so that as soon as the show, I can't remember if it was when it was completely done or if it, I think it would start like right away. It would find the commercials and then it would write the timestamps of when the commercials started and ended into a separate file. And then there's another plugin. This was all part of DVRMS Toolbox. That would run inside of Windows Media Center and it would read the file that just has those timestamps in it. And as it was playing back through a file, when it got to one of those timestamps, bloop, it immediately just jumps over it for you.
Exactly.
And if it messed up, you could rewind.
Exactly.
You can't rewind if this Plex option screws up.
Oh, you can. You just don't get to the stuff you missed. So, right. You know, the way that you just described in addition to the tools that we had as plugins to Media Center, is how Dish does it. It's how TiVo does it. It's how even the service that is, I'm trying to think of the name of it. There's another service that I use that does something very similar because it's non-destructive. And,
right.
Oh, by the way, it's faster to process. And, oh, by the way, it gives you the most flexibility. And I think you're absolutely right. I think they took the easy path out for implementation, which is one that would not require updates to the clients. I'm hoping this is a stopgap, because if it's not, it is not going to work for a lot of people. And let's start talking about why. Let me share my experience. My first show, as you said, they're all just automatically now going to record this way, even though you didn't tell them to. My first show that I recorded ended up being 38 minutes out of an hour, so I knew that something was wrong. And sure enough, I start playing, and it's well into the show already.
Oh, no.
It did an excellent job of cutting out the commercials, but it also apparently cut out a lot more.
Yeah. The show that I tested with, which was just some random comedy that I hated, but I had to watch it for all of you listeners. I had to put up with some terrible comedy to test this out. It actually worked really well. It didn't cut out like one commercial. It cut out most of the commercial break, but it missed like the last one. And then the very end of the show, the very, very end, it cut a little bit too much. It was probably like while the credits were rolling or something. But other than that little bit, it didn't wreck the show at all, which I would rather it be, you know, on the conservative side than liberally just cutting chunks out all over the place, right? Because I would rather have a few extra commercials than miss pieces of the show like what you got.
How do you know that it was the commercial skipping that cut the end of the show? Maybe the recording itself cut the show.
Well, yeah, that is also a possibility, but there's no real way for me to know for sure.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't like the way I love that they're doing this. I didn't expect this. Did you expect this, Josh?
No, I didn't expect this at all. I never would have expected Plex to implement this. I kind of expected maybe some third-party people to try it and figure out a way to make Plex do this, but I didn't expect Plex to do it.
Right. So I'm excited that they're trying it, but this is the wrong approach. It needs to be non-destructive. And yes, that means that the only clients that can benefit from it are those that are updated to support the time code skip metadata. But A, that is so much cleaner. B, it is so much more lightweight, quite frankly, for your server that is maintaining and managing this content, and for them. And C, yes, I acknowledge it's more work for them.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we have an update to Vudu. And the Vudu app on the Xbox One X and S boxes, now Xbox boxes, now supports HDR. I'm a little bit ashamed to admit that I didn't realize it didn't already.
Well, then we're both ashamed, because I didn't realize it either. I knew that the Vudu app supported 4K for a while, and I knew that Vudu had movies that had HDR, but I think I've only rented, or I guess I actually purchased it. No, was it through Vudu? I think it was through Vudu. A few weeks ago when I got Cars 3, I think I did that through Vudu, but I don't remember if that had HDR. I was just buying a movie that the family wanted. If it was just me looking for a movie, I absolutely would have looked for one with HDR. But no, I didn't realize that this didn't work. But yeah, it didn't work previously, and that was because Vudu's content, their HDX format, up until basically this week, only used Dolby Vision for its HDR metadata, and the Xbox One doesn't support Dolby Vision yet. Theoretically could. It's not a hardware limitation. They just don't do it in software yet. And that's my guess is licensing. It costs money. It's Dolby. Got to pay them the bucks to be able to support those things.
Yep.
So now Vudu has some content that is HDR10. Now they say there's over 30 titles with HDR10. The story that we're going to link to over at Windows Central even list a few of them. I don't even think they were correct. They mentioned Mad Max Fury Road. Yep. Looks like that is HDR10. But they mentioned some other ones, and it didn't look like it would work. So there isn't a lot of information as to how you would know. And you also won't even necessarily know by going to the website. If you go to Vudu's website right now and look up Mad Max Fury Road, it says HDR, but it says Dolby Vision. And I think it's probably because it supports both Dolby Vision and HDR10. So they just only show Dolby Vision because that's what people want. Dolby Vision is typically better than HDR10. So that's what they show. But I did notice a couple of things that do display differently when using the Vudu app on an Xbox One. This is on my Xbox One S. I went to Mad Max and it has the little HDR icon, and there's like a little flower shaped icon next to it that's multiple colors. And then the words HDR are in like bright, bold white.
Right.
Then I went to Atomic Blonde and it said HDR, but it was almost like it was grayed out.
Right. Exactly. And so that means that your device is not capable of supporting that capability. And that's one of the things that they've been actually pretty good at across the different services. So basically, they've replaced their previous Dolby indicator with a more generic HDR indicator. And it's kind of a crapshoot to know whether your titles are going to have it or not. You just have to check by title. And, you know, 30 titles. Ooh, 30 titles. Okay, 30 titles out of all of their content is not much at all. I had two, Tarzan and Wonder Woman. That's it.
And Wonder Woman was HDR10?
It was available through HDR10, and also Tarzan was. And I have other HDR titles that did not show up as available in HDR. They were the grayed out HDR. So they were only Dolby. And so, you know, Arrival is one of those. And I have a number of others as well.
Okay. Now you're ripping on them for only having 30-ish titles, but how many UHD titles does Vudu even have?
Well, so that's another good point. And this will get into something that I'll talk about a little bit later, but not that many compared to other services. Right. Like if you look at the HDR titles that they offer compared to the HDR titles that say you could buy on Google or on Apple's iTunes service, it's significantly less. I don't understand why that is.
Hmm. I didn't realize that either. I figured that most of those stores all had about the same content. Interesting and really unfortunate because Vudu is kind of the one I go to for video content. And if not there, then Amazon. But
well, right, because it is probably the most cross-platform, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Although now that we've got Movies Anywhere, you know, if you tell me that Google Play Store has more content, maybe I'll actually start looking there. Because then once you've got it, that there's that Play Anywhere app on most of these devices. So I could watch them pretty much anywhere, hence the name Anywhere, Play Anywhere. Yep. All right, so let's move on to some gaming news. We've got a couple of different updates for the Xbox One to talk about. The first one, this is only for Xbox insiders, and I think that this is pretty much every ring of the Xbox Insider program. They've now added a whole lot more filters in the store. So, you know, once you go to the store and you wait the 10 years for the store to open, now at least you've got some faster ways to filter down what it is that you might be looking for. Because currently you have one filter when you do a search for something, and that is type. And by type, they mean, were you looking for an app with this name, a game, movies, TV shows, etc. And that's a great place to start, but What if you wanted to look for
kids games?
Kids games under $15. Good luck. That was going to be a nightmare. Well, with this new update, all of that is possible. They've added, gosh, I want to say it was like 9 filters. I'm not going to go through all of them, but they've got genre filters, rating as in like what rating people gave to the game, number of stars sort of rating, ESRB rating, so that you can say like E10 or lower, you know, that sort of thing. Price, multiplayer, Xbox One X enhancements, like all of these different filters to choose from. And it is exactly what you want from a store. Like anything that they can do to a store to make it easier to find the things that you actually want to buy makes sense for consumers and for the owner of the store. So I'm really excited to check this out. It wasn't on the Xbox that I used to go and look for this, though. So I don't have a whole lot of firsthand knowledge with it yet, but I'm really excited to get to use this because it is fun to kind of browse around the store.
Yeah, this was desperately needed.
Absolutely. So the other update, this one is available to everybody with an Xbox One. And as a reminder to people, if on this show, if we just say Xbox One, that means any Xbox One console.
All of them.
Right. The original giant black hulking one that came out in 2013.
Hey, everyone.
Xbox One S, the Xbox One X, all of them. If we just say Xbox One, it means any and all of them. Okay, so this update came out for any and all Xbox One systems for people, even if you're not in the Insider Preview Ring. Basically, a smallish fall update that has some nice features. We talked last week when I talked about setting up my Xbox One X that they've improved the setup experience some. Like now, all of your settings can be backed up to the cloud, which, by the way, Richard, you had asked me if I had done that profile backup thing, would it have kept all of my like Netflix and Amazon credentials and all of that?
Right.
I've got a coworker who went through all of this last night. Yeah, it doesn't. He still had to put all of that information in. Yeah. So that still stinks, but most everything else did work. So there's that. There's also apparently some ability. I would kind of like to check this out and I might be able to, cause I think I'm going to be resetting one of my Xboxes soon. The ability to set up your Xbox from a phone, like from your Android or iOS phone, while it's doing its update, you know, because every time you get a new Xbox, of course, there's a big update to install when you first plug it in. I'm guessing the way that works is you pick a lot of the settings that you would normally save or pick, and then they get backed up to the cloud. And once all of the updates have processed through, it just downloads them from the cloud. So that's a cool feature. Another one worth pointing out for those of you with kids, the Xbox One supports the concept of screen time, limiting how much screen time your kids can have with the Xbox. For a while, they've had the ability to request more screen time. Like maybe they don't have homework tonight, or maybe they did really well on their grade cards or something like that. And you want to reward them with some more screen time. They can ask for that. But previously, for you to grant them that access, you would have to go to the console they were on and fiddle with some things and enable that. Now, from the console, they can say, hey, mom or dad, can I have some more screen time? And it will email you. And from that email, I imagine a link to the website, you can grant them that access. So maybe you're at work and they're home from school and or it's a snow day or, you know, whatever reason. You can grant them that extra screen time without having to be there. So that's a cool feature to have.
Say no. Just say no.
Just say no. Yeah. Just be jerks all the time. Always say no. And then another one is, you know, this one was kind of interesting. Windows Central and some of the other sites reported that they were enabling more Cortana skills. But then when I actually went to my Xbox and went to the part where you can see the release notes on the Xbox, this wasn't listed there. I think maybe it was supposed to be part of this update, but then wasn't because I tried doing some extra things with Cortana on my Xbox after installing this, and none of them worked. None of them. I can still do way more with that Harman Kardon Invoke than I can with Cortana on the Xbox.
And so, that is just ridiculously infuriating to me. Like the fact, I'll bet if you walked into your room and said, hey, play some music from Hans Zimmer, that it would work. I still can't do that with my Xbox.
Right. Yeah. 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 That's really, really frustrating. So that's not there yet, but I imagine is probably coming soon. And like I said, all of the rest of these updates are available to everybody. You've probably got them, but you may not, because one of the weird things about this update, which I don't recall them ever doing before for the Xbox One, is this is actually an optional update. It wasn't just automatically installed for people. On the two Xboxes that I was trying to make sure this was installed on, I had to go and kick off the update myself. It didn't do it on its own. So, Richard, you probably don't even have this on your Xbox yet, because you probably don't go into the system settings and check for updates because it's automatically enabled.
Yeah, that's really weird. I don't understand why that would be that way.
Yeah, I'm not really sure either. All right, well, to round out our Xbox news, we always talk about the latest deals with gold. Last week was the week. If you missed out on all of the Black Friday deals, well, you really missed out, because there's really nothing worth talking about this week on deals with gold, which is absolutely to be expected. You did? What did you buy?
I bought the BioShock pack because I have wanted to have BioShock since like BioShock 1, and I've never been
60.
Yeah, yeah, and I've never been willing to pay for it, and I didn't want to just buy one of them or whatever. And then BioShock 2 came out, and that was really cool. And then I didn't want to pay for it, and so now I think it was like $10 or something for all the BioShock, okay. You could have.
Which I think is three games. I think it's 1, 2, and Infinite, if I remember correctly. So that's really awesome. When are you going to play them?
I don't want to get into the details.
I need you to commit. I need you to commit right now that sometime between now and CES, at the very least, you've got a holiday break in there. You have to commit to at least spending an hour or more playing the first BioShock.
I have a character stuck in the middle of Ori waiting for me to come back.
True. But that game is really hard.
It is. And
BioShock is probably not as hard.
Okay. Ironically.
Probably. Anyway, if you actually paid money for a game, you need to check it out soon. And I want to hear about it. I actually didn't play BioShock, any of them. So I would be very curious to hear out when for you. Okay, so that was all the games that you could spend money for. Games with gold, those are the free ones. You might be listening to this on the last day of November. If so, you've got a few hours left to get Trackmania Turbo on Xbox One and Deadfall Adventures on Xbox 360. Yep, it is the end of the month, and I still haven't done any research as to what that game is. I'm not going to play it. I didn't download it. I don't
Obviously, you don't care about it.
Don't care. So for December, all month long on Xbox One is Warhammer, The End Times, Vermintide is how I'm going to guess this is pronounced. I had to look up information about this one. I had never heard of it. I've heard of Warhammer. Like, I think most of our listeners have probably heard of the Warhammer franchise, but I don't know what this game was. If you're familiar with the old Valve games, Left 4 Dead, which were four-player, first person, you're trying to escape like a zombie apocalypse sort of situation. Picture that sort of gameplay, but in a high fantasy setting of Warhammer. And apparently that's what this game is. And I thought Left 4 Dead was tons of fun. So despite the fact that I've never heard of this game, I might actually get this one and check it out, because Left 4 Dead was a blast. Then December 16th through January 15th, Back to the Future, the game. Another one I don't know anything about. Typically licensed games are garbage. I have no idea if this one is any good, and I don't go crazy about Back to the Future, so I'm not sure on that one. On the Xbox 360 side, for the first half of December, you get Child of Eden, which is a rhythm action game that was originally developed for you to primarily use with Kinect. I never played this. I'm curious if it works with the Xbox One Kinect. I'm going to guess that it doesn't, but I've got one, so I'm going to try it. I mean, it's got my kid's name right in the title. I've got to check this out, right? And then the other game for the month of December, the last half of December on 360, is another one I've never heard of called Marlo Briggs and the Mask of Death. And the likelihood of me playing this one is slim to none also, but I'll try and look it up to at least figure out what the heck this game is.
I've never even heard of it.
In the next couple of weeks. No, neither have I. Like, I've heard of almost every game that has been available for Games with Gold, but this Marlo Briggs game I've never heard of, and that Deadfall Adventures game I'd never heard of. So they're kind of feels like they're scraping the bottom of the barrel on these Games with Gold as we round out the end of the year here. But that's all right. They're still free games. All right. Well, that does it for all of our news for the week, Richard. But it's been 2 weeks since we've done an episode, and I'm going to bet that that means that you had a whole lot of time to watch and do and play with a whole lot of things in your entertainment center. So what you been doing?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I've been doing quite a lot. So a lot of hardware configuration and testing. I mentioned previously that I was testing the Neo remote, and I had some problems with that. I couldn't get it to actually control my AVR, and I had some problems with it properly controlling TiVo the way I would expect it to. I have to say that within a couple of days of notifying them of this, they managed to correct the IR code problems that my remote and my TiVo had, and now those things are working properly. I am still testing it. I'm still having some problems with IR, I guess, range, for lack of a better word. So I need to make sure that I have the hub, or brain, as they call it, placed properly. But so far, it's an interesting product. It has so much capability. I am so spoiled by the simplicity of the Harmony, though. So this is a hard sell for me. We'll have to see how this goes. I also wanted to follow up on my comments about getting a play bar or any sort of front speaker sound bar configuration. Our friend Rob from AV Rant politely reminded me over Twitter that I was wrong, and my receiver is not able to send digital output to a speaker in addition to sending the analog outputs to other speakers while sending content over HDMI. Just doesn't happen. Can't work. So the Sonos Playbar is not a solution that would work for me. He did, however, suggest a couple of alternatives that I will look into. Josh, not surprisingly, they're all kind of expensive.
Yeah. I mean, you're trying to do Atmos. That doesn't tend to be cheap. And when you're considering anything Sonos, that's automatically not cheap, but it's not going to be a Sonos option here. So yeah, curious to see what sort of options are available for you and how well they work and what you end up going with.
So basically what he reminded me of is that what I really need is a 3.0 solution, and I need something that can act as a 3.0 solution independently of anything else that's going on in my speaker system. So I will be looking at those and making a decision about what I want for Christmas. Although this kind of bums me out because I really wanted a drone for Christmas, but I'm guessing it's going to be this instead. We'll see. All right. So the next thing is, between last time and now, we had Black Friday, we had sales, we also had some, I don't know, incentives. Let's call them incentives. Not necessarily sales, because I paid full price, but I bought the 4K version of the Apple TV. I had been holding out. I figured, all right, I'll go ahead and get it. And I bought it because there was a good deal with the Delta Miles, where I could get extra Delta Miles because Apple was giving you more miles per dollar or whatever. I forget how that worked. Anyway, I have it set up. And remember the rant from last time about setting up all my channels? I had to do it again. And so I did. And man, it is beautiful. It is so beautiful. I am loving the 4K version of the Apple TV. And I have to say, if you use Movies Anywhere, and this is what I was talking about earlier with Vudu, if you're not using a Google app or a YouTube app or iTunes to play back your 4K video, you're really missing out, because these stores have the content in 4K. Vudu just doesn't have the 4K content that these do. I can't tell you how many things I have bought in Vudu that show up in Vudu as HDX, which means HD.
Well, it could mean 4K.
No, it doesn't. HDX means HD. UHD is a separate designation in Vudu for 4K content.
But doesn't it still come down in an HDX container?
No, it's labeled as UHD.
Okay.
So what ends up happening is that I have all of these things that I bought in 4K disc format. I redeemed the digital code, and then I go to Vudu, even though in some cases they were Warner videos, meaning that was the only place I could get them, and they're not in 4K. But if I go to my Apple TV, or if I go to Google, they're in 4K. It doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense.
Makes no sense at all. So think about this. If you're a Vudu user and you're really into 4K, you might want to consider instead, through Movies Anywhere, seeing what those movies are available as on either the Apple or the Google formats, because in all likelihood, they're going to be better. And in Apple's case, and I think this is true with Google too, they've upgraded movies that you didn't even buy in 4K to 4K. So definitely worth looking beyond Vudu for this content, which is really sad and sorry for me to say, because we've been real advocates of Vudu over the past years.
Yeah, for sure. They've always been the place to go for the highest quality stuff.
Yep. Yep. Just not the case anymore. All right. I also, another deal, this was a Cyber Monday weakness, I'll call it. I ordered the Kinect Quattro because, you know, I mentioned that my HD Home Run original tuner died a few weeks ago. So I'm going to hook this up to my antenna and hook this into Plex, so that I can get more of my network TV coverage through this.
Very nice. And those were on sale this weekend too, right?
$50 off at Best Buy. So instead of $150, wow, it was $100, which is the price of the two tuner version that you can buy in the store.
That's great.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. All right. Lots of watching going on because, you know, holidays, friends over, stuff like that. The usual stuff that I normally watch, This Is Us, Hawaii 5-0, Arrow and Flash. And also, I wanted to just remind people that the new DC crossover on the CW is this week. So that means those are the four shows. In addition to the Flash and Arrow, it would be Supergirl and Legends. And all four of those have like one big story that is being told. So I will be watching that. The intent, obviously, is to get you to watch the other shows. It didn't work for me last year. I don't know that it'll work for me this year, but I at least enjoy the crossover. Also been watching The Orville, Big Bang Theory, and Modern Family, trying to catch up on Shameless, but I'm a little bit behind on that. Shears, because of the kind of walkthrough, talkthrough that they're doing on one of Jenny Josephson's podcasts. And the last episode of Firefly, I still have to watch I still have to watch the movie Serenity, which I have not yet watched, and they just this week covered on Spoiler in Time.
You've seen Serenity before, though, right?
I have. In fact, little known fact, when DVD, HD, no, I have that wrong, HD DVD and Blu-ray disc came out and they more or less released at exactly the same time. I bought two discs before I owned any player, because, you know, this is what I do.
Yes, it is.
I bought Serenity on HD DVD, and I bought a movie on Blu-ray, and the name of it is escaping me right now, and I know exactly what it is. I have it in my head. It's Bruce Willis, futuristic film. I can't
think of it. Fifth Element.
Fifth Element. Thank you very much. Yes, exactly. And I remember at work taking them in, because I had them shipped to me at the office, and I took them in to the lab, and I held them up to the guys around. I'm like, all right, which do you think? Which do you think is going to have survived? And they looked at me like I had three heads. Like they didn't even know what I was talking about. Well, I wouldn't have expected the Sony solution to survive. Sadly, it did.
Nope.
I did, however, rip the content from Serenity, which is entirely legal as a result of one of the Library of Congress exemptions for the DMCA, because it's in a now defunct digital format. And I will be watching that sometime this week. All right.
Cool.
I also caught up this weekend on Dirk Gently, and if you didn't catch it this week, I have been listening to a song from that show that was on one of the episodes. It is like stuck in my head, and it was just kind of a fun boppy song. I finished the thing, you know, Louis C.K., been in the news, not for good reasons, not for surprising reasons, sadly. And I decided that I would watch the rest of the series that I had purchased and downloaded that I bought from his site called Horace and Pete. I watched that. Wow. So sad. Really, really disturbing and sad. But I did want to finish that off. I also mentioned last time that I was going to be rewatching Westworld, and I had watched the movies in anticipation of that. So I rewatched that whole series and enjoyed it, I think, more now knowing what I know and looking back. It was kind of like watching Inception for the second time, right? Like knowing what you know, and Inception, the funny thing is that you don't really know anything. You don't know how it turns out, but you go back and you look for all the signs anyway. And I did the same sort of thing in Westworld, and that was kind of cool. And what I haven't been watching, interestingly, is The Defenders.
Because it's boring?
I'm stuck. I'm just not interested.
Told you.
I need to get through it. Well, but yeah, right.
Nope.
Meanwhile, I really enjoyed Iron Fist, right? I enjoyed it despite everybody just slamming on it. The Defenders, not interesting. Nothing's happening. I don't understand. All right. What I have been doing, watching a lot of YouTube. Not sure why, but there's a lot of interesting content out there, and I've been kind of hooked on some storyline stuff that avid fans have like clipped out of shows and pulled together into in like streams of episodes to create a consolidated storyline. So that's kind of fun. And finally, I watched Superman Homecoming in UHD on my Atmos system, and it was freaking cool and I loved it. So yeah, there's that. That
I'm sure
is
it was cooler because it was actually Spider-Man Homecoming, not Superman Homecoming.
Oh, did I say Superman?
You did.
Yeah.
Would have been terrible. Like that, guaranteed. Terrible.
I'm sure it would have been terrible.
Well, cool. So I, like I mentioned at the top of the show, was traveling for a whole lot of this time that we've been away from the show. So I haven't done anywhere near as much as you have. But one of the things that you and I both checked out, because we talked, I believe, on the very last episode, was Ultraviolet has sharing built into it that I don't think most people know about. I had no idea when you mentioned it last week. So we decided to play around with this. And so Richard offered to share his Ultraviolet library with me. It is the worst sharing imaginable.
It's sharing kind of defined like region switching.
Sort of. So let's use food, because food's really simple, right?
Okay.
So we're sitting at the cafeteria, okay? I'm eating some pizza. Richard has some amazing Chinese food, and he walks over to me and says, hey, would you like to share my Chinese food? absolutely. And so Richard says, cool, and picks up my pizza and throws it in the garbage. That's how this works. Right? Because it means if I share with Richard's ultraviolet library, it means that I don't have access to mine anymore. It's insane. Why would I choose that?
That was awesome. I had to mute because I was laughing so hard.
It doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, maybe they were like, I know, we'll get a lot of people to think that we're really nice if we implement sharing. And then the greedy people at the top were like, oh, but if we're going to do sharing, let's make it terrible so that no one actually does it. So that's ultraviolet sharing.
So here's where this works. Where this works is if you are, say, a family that has kids that are going off to college, and sure, the kids want to be able to access your library of content, they might also want to be able to, say, you know, watch their own stuff on Vudu. They might want to be able to rent stuff, but they don't have the money to buy their own movies, and they want to watch their parents' movies while they're at college. This is ideal for this scenario, and I think this is the only thing that it was actually intended for. Mm-hmm. Family sharing, where there's a predominant library manager, and everybody else is just like a Vudu user.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a use case that does make sense.
So, yeah, it's disappointing. It's not the way that I would have hoped that it worked or that I expected it to. I want to just correct you real quickly. It wasn't me that brought this to your attention. It was one of our listeners who brought this to our attention when they were talking about content sharing and how it kind of fit with all the content that we also were talking about managing across accounts with Movies Anywhere.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're absolutely right. So the only other thing I did was over Black Friday, I also did a little bit of purchasing things for myself. I did buy some presents for other people, but I mean Black Friday, if we're being honest, it's about buying things for yourself.
Oh yeah,
right.
Oh yeah.
So I'm no different than anybody else in that regard, and I did something that I think really shocked you, Richard, when you found out about this. I bought a PlayStation 4.
Yeah, traitor.
Well, unlike Ultraviolet, it didn't require me stomping on my Xbox One to do it. You know, I got to keep them both. So the PS4 is coming this week. And then I also bought, and this is one of the huge reasons why I bought it, was for one particular game, Horizon Zero Dawn. It came out at the beginning of this year. It is a PlayStation exclusive. I had maybe hoped that maybe, because when I originally heard about this game, I didn't realize that it was also published by Sony. I had hoped that maybe it was just some third-party company that did an exclusivity deal with Sony, and that maybe eventually it would come to PC. No, it is a Sony game. It'll only ever be on PlayStation 4, and everyone just talks about how amazing Horizon Zero Dawn is and how great the story is. And I'm not sure if you've heard this, Richard, but I have another podcast about story-driven video games. It's called Story Players. You should check it out sometime. It's really great.
I have heard about that, actually.
And I didn't feel like I just have to play this game. And there's other really great Sony games also. Does this mean that I'm jumping ship and that I'm not going to cover Xbox stuff or I'm not going to play Xbox stuff anymore? Absolutely not. I'm not going to be paying money for the Sony equivalent of Xbox Live Gold. I'm still going to play all my multiplayer games on Xbox. But for the Sony exclusives, now I'm finally going to be able to play them because I haven't had a Sony system since the PlayStation 2. So I missed all of the PS3 exclusives, and I've missed the first 4 years of PlayStation 4 exclusives. So, yeah, when they were down to $200, yeah, it was a deal that I couldn't pass up. So I got one at Kohl's that came with Uncharted 4 and then picked up Horizon Zero Dawn for $20 at Best Buy. So I am excited to get started on those. What that does mean, I said a couple weeks ago that I started playing Final Fantasy 15. I can't play Final Fantasy 15 and Horizon Zero Dawn at the same time. They're both 35-hour games. That's not going to work. So I let Joe, my co-host on Story Players, borrow Final Fantasy 15, and I'm going to get started on Horizon Zero Dawn as soon as humanly possible, because it just sounds so amazing.
All right, so I know I'm on a little bit of shaky ground here, because I came into the show and you were already well established here, and this was all about Microsoft technology. But, you know, if you end up deciding for some crazy reason that the PS4 is a better platform for your interest as a gamer than the Xbox, I might have to kick you off the show.
I really don't see that happening. And I mean, A, in terms of user interface stuff, like, I've never thought that Sony did any of that stuff anywhere near as well as Microsoft. And then there's the fact that all of my gamer friends game on Xbox.
Yeah.
And I love multiplayer games. So yeah. I'm not going to switch from Xbox for that stuff alone. Plus, the Xbox, it is our media device. It is effectively the only thing connected to our primary TV in the living room. It is what everybody uses. That's not going to change. So, no, I have no concerns about that happening. And I suspect that next week, because I've not, like, not only have I not played these PS4 games, I've never even used, like, not even at a Best Buy, a PlayStation 4. So I don't really know what I'm even getting into here. So I'm guessing that next week I'm going to come on the show and talk about how terrible the PlayStation 4 user experience is compared to the Xbox One experience. But
sure.
It's all about the game. It's all about Horizon Zero Dawn right now. So we'll see.
All right. Well, that is it for our updates. Quick announcement before we get out of here. You know, for a long time, I've talked about the sessions that we had at the Smart Kitchen Summit, and in particular, the one that I put together called Don't Brick My Fridge, which, frankly, I'm really proud of. I think it talks a lot about issues that are very important for product manufacturers, particularly durable goods manufacturers, to be thinking about as they embark on creating connected devices for the marketplace. So I kind of volunteered to write an article for The Spoon being the site that's also managed by the same people who manage the show, the Smart Kitchen Summit, about the Don't Brick My Fridge topic as a placeholder or container, if you will, for the Don't Brick My Fridge video embed that would be on their site. And that is now available, and we'll have a link in the show notes. And I basically go through some of the primary things the companies really need to be thinking about as they're moving from this model of building big steel boxes to actually producing connected electronic devices. So I think it's an interesting read. And if you're interested in the video of the session that I had there, that is, as I mentioned, embedded in that article.
Very cool. Very, very cool. I know I enjoyed the session that you did at the Smart Kitchen Summit, because you included that in your latest episode of Home On. And yeah, that was a great session. So very interested to check out the full article that you wrote about it. Cool. All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's show. If you want to get a hold of us, there's a lot of ways you can do that. We're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at Digi Media Zone. That's D-I-G-I Media Zone. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/theDMZ. We just mentioned some of our other podcasts, Richard's show, Home On, covering the latest smart home technology, and my other show, Story Players. It's been a couple of weeks since we've had an episode, But coming out next week will be our very next one. We're playing a relatively new game. This is only like a 2-month-old game called Please Knock on My Door. It's a very odd title for a game, but it's a game that covers some important topics that are very timely right now, I think, and that is depression. It is a game about dealing with depression. So I think you almost definitely know someone who deals with the effects of mental depression, and I think this will be a really interesting game to play through. Probably not fun, but I think it's going to be a really, really interesting game. So look for that early next week on Story Players.
Josh, I have to say that I listened to the Edith Finch episode that you guys mm-hmm. did recently on Story Players. And as I mentioned, you know, I'm not playing these games, so this show is not targeted toward me, but the way that you told the story around what was happening in this game, and this is a one episode coverage of this game, mm-hmm. I was just like glued to it. I completely enjoyed the episode and had an opportunity to again remember what an amazing job you're doing of producing this really tight show.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's definitely what we're going for. So it's cool to hear that even someone who didn't play through the game or doesn't play through many games at all is getting something out of it. So very cool. Thank you very much. All right. If you want to interact with us in real time while we're recording the show, you can do that because we always use Mixer to do that. And that's normally Tuesday nights, 8:30 p.m. Eastern for when we sit down to record this show. Follow us on Twitter to know for sure when we're going to be on. And then you might also just want to subscribe on Mixer. It's mixer.com/entertainment20 to find that. And you'll get notified as soon as we go live. But that's going to do it for episode 431. He's Richard Gunther and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.